From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Elizabeth Furse served 3 terms from Oregon's 1st Congressional District. She was the first African-born member of the United States Congress. Furse has been an activist and thinker on issues ranging from farm worker rights to anti-nuclear efforts. She's currently working on Native American issues and tribal rights. She began her life of activism with anti-apartheid work in her native South Africa. How did Oregon become your home?
Oregon still fitted what I felt about things. I was married in England and to a doctor, and he and I both decided that going to Oregon would be wonderful. And I came to Oregon and became a citizen in 72. And Oregon has stayed very much that, the personification in many ways of what I think a country, a place should be.
Do you care to elaborate on what you think a country and a place should be?
Well, I look at the leadership that we've had, and I look at the sort of sensitivity to the place, the country. We've had Supreme Court judges who stood out for that. Mark Hatfield, I always thought, was not only a civil rights activist, but also had a clear view of the preciousness of the environment. And so I felt very comfortable, and came to Oregon after I had divorced, and I had 2 children.
A lot of new women are now in Congress. I believe when you went to Congress, you also entered with kind of a class that included a lot of freshman women. Now there's a lot of new women entering Congress, including, and from both parties, of course, but it includes a group of fairly creative and radical thinkers and activists. And I wonder if you see them as a group who can and will make and be able to make real change.
Yes, I do, because I think what I admire a great deal about the group is that they have a clear idea of where they're going. When you go into the Congress, it's a very overwhelming thing. I mean, here you are, you go in and there's all this pomp and circumstance, and suddenly you think you have the duty to do a great deal for the people you represent. But they have, more than that, have held on to some ideas of what they think will make a difference on them. My emphasis was always on civil rights and environmental rights, but these people are seeing even bigger than that, I think. I think it's very heartening to find new members who didn't take 10 years to feel safe where they were. They just were what they were and do what they do.
In terms of the institution, which certainly to the perhaps uninitiated eye seems bogged down to some degree in ritual and in the way it does things kind of glacially, slowly, maybe that's changing. But I wonder specifically what people now are facing. Perhaps are there changes as you see it? Do you see positive movement towards how business is done in Congress?
Well, I think people coming in to the Congress now and in the last 10 years come in many cases to make change. Not all work, not all. Some of them just come to have a nice, easy space to live in. But I think there's a real sense about the new members that they're there to do something, not just to sit, not just to have a good, nice, lifestyle, but to in fact make change. And I think that is different. I think also when I went into the Congress, people got on with each other. I mean, the Republicans and Democrats worked together, so it's easier. And then, of course, Newt Gingrich got in, and he, in my view, caused this real difference between the two parties. He talked on the microphone for hours every evening about how dreadful government was, and he, I think, caused a lot of his feeling that government wasn't there to help. And really why I left the Congress, I think, for sure, was that I could no longer be bothered with that kind of, you're a Republican, I'm a Democrat. I always thought we were there to do something for the people who we represented. And I blame Newt Gingrich for changing the Congress, making it okay to be nasty and mean about your fellow members. I mean, we've seen it worst of all, of course, with Mr. Trump, but there was a real change then. That was in 75.
Do you see a real conversation about term limits coming up?
Oh, you know, I don't. I don't hear about that much. And of course, that would be very useful. Although some of the older members, the people who've been there a long time, can be very much a great voice for newer members, because some of them have stayed along. See, I really admired Mark Hatfield, a Republican, but he cared about civil rights. He cared about some environmental protections. When I was working for the tribes in late 80s, we were putting through some pretty difficult legislation to overturn what was called the Termination Act. And Mark Hatfield was right there for me. I mean, he would say to me, you get it through the House, Elizabeth, and we'll get it through the Senate. And that some of those were very controversial bills, with Klamath Tribe, for instance. So, although I'm a devoted Democrat, I think there was something in Oregon that created some pretty successful, you know, across the aisle opportunities.
Let's move to kind of current events in your current life, and I know it's a huge overreaching term to just say tribal issues and Native American issues. But if you would drill down a bit for me and explain, what do you see as really important issues and situations to think about and on which you are working?
Well, I've been doing work with tribes for a long time. When I was in Washington, living in Seattle, American Friends Service Committee asked me to be there. A tribal representative, which I'm not tribal, but they. So I worked on fishing rights issues. The tribes themselves must lead the issue. It can't be non-Indian saying, oh, this would be good for them if we gave them a lot of housing or something. There are some really crucial issues that only the tribal people know. Termination was one of them. That was the federal government saying that they picked these tribes and said, oh, you're not no longer Indian, because the relationship between the federal government and the tribe is a dreadful situation. Devastated Oregon tribes, and so for 8 years we helped achieve legislation to restore that tribal recognition. So issues of tribal people were easy, I think, for me to move toward, because I had been involved in the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa as a very young woman. My mother was deeply involved. But it always seemed to me you have to wait and ask the people who are the most affected. There's lots of people say, oh, this would be good for, you know, for those people. This, but it has to come from the people most affected. And you would think that'd be simple, but it truly hasn't been for a long time. And we're very fortunate when we have tribal leaders who are able to focus the attention of churches or civil rights groups or whatever.
And as a non-Indian person advocating for Native Americans, Are you using your legal training? Are you using your governmental understanding? What are you giving to them, completely understanding and accepting what you're saying about really they need to be driving the boat?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
Well, I've been always fortunate in the work I've done with tribes in Seattle. It was fishing rights. And the tribes who were most affected came to the American Friends Service Committee as an advocacy group. So they explained what it was they needed. what it was they wanted to restore. I think it's not really my training. I think I just was fortunate to always be somewhere where something needed to be done. My mother would always say, look, wherever you are, there's something that you could help with. And so when tribes would come to me or through the Native American Program of Oregon Legal Services, I was ready to listen and accept that they were the people who were in charge.
It is important, I believe it is important, for leaders, whether former leaders, current leaders, people who have been involved in kind of the process changing. I really appreciate it when they are reflective and give some insight into perhaps what we're doing and where we're going, and really what do you think just a regular person can potentially do? Are you optimistic about positive changes?
Well, I am optimistic when I see Black Lives Matter, when I see groups who are willing to act correctly. There are groups who are willing to do the hard work. And I think those people, and I think some of the new members, will make a difference. I'm interested, especially when young people take up an issue. And when I think about the demonstrations in Portland that went on day after day after day, that's not easy. And the stick-to-itiveness, the same was true with fishing rights in both in Oregon and in Washington. The fishers would be there all the time demonstrating their use of, you know, of the river and making people aware of how important it was. And I think that is very difficult to keep that up. But, boy, they did do it in both the tribes now and in big cases, U.S. v. Oregon. But so also are people doing that, going day after day and say, no, this is important. We believe in this.
Is there something we haven't touched on here, a topic that you really, or a thought that you really want to make sure that you share or that you muse on? Maybe there's something you muse on every day.
Well, I'm incredibly interested in the way climate change has become so important to people, because it's so obviously important to all of us. I was so inspired by the young woman Greta. And, you know, the power of that young woman and other people like her, oh, I just feel so glad that they're there. And I do think that climate change is an issue that we all have to be involved in. I see the change right here in my own land, and I've been here 35 years. So that's not a huge amount of time, but I can see the change. And it affects so many people, particularly affects indigenous people, because fish are not coming to the rivers. Things are changing, things on which they depend. And so it's not something, oh dear, what a shame, yes, uh-huh. It's real, and it's very vital that we stay involved. And we stay involved with people who tell us, hey, this is really happening.
I really appreciate your time today, Elizabeth. Thank you so much. You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.